It's time for a pro-life update. We'll be talking with Eric Scheidler to find out the latest on the whole issue of life. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Eric, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm glad to be with you.
All right, I'm going to timestamp this interview, even though it'll air in a couple weeks. This is being recorded in early February 2020. And as we look at the whole issue of the pro-life, first of all, why don't we talk a little bit about the fact that there are a few remnant pro-life Democrats. I believe you even know one of them, a congressman from Illinois. But the left is trying to hound them out of the Democrat Party. It's not that big of a tent.
No, it's not a big tent. In fact, a good friend of mine, Kristen Day, actually confronted presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg at a Fox News town hall saying, are pro-life Democrats welcome in the party? You know, would you support a official, you know, language on the Democratic Party platform that would say, we understand there's a diversity of views on this contentious issue, and pro-life, or, you know, people, or however they want to call them, anti-abortion, whatever, are welcome in the party. And that's what they used to say. That was their official position, was that, yes, we are favoring abortion as a party, but we recognize there are people who disagree, and that's okay. And he just obfuscated it. It was sad to see. You know, he's a slick character and really refused to give her a straight answer on that question. She kept pressing. And that got a ton of media coverage. You know, and it's a sad day because we're ultimately not going to end abortion in a, you know, monopartisan way. It's going to take a bipartisan effort. And I think that's precisely why the advocates of abortion are trying so hard to get rid of people like Congressman Dan Lipinski from Illinois' 3rd District. Dan is a valiantly pro-life congressman. He is one of only two truly pro-life congressmen, you know, in the entire House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. right now. And it would be a horrible loss for him to lose that seat.
Wow.
But at the same time, you know, there's people like Katrina Jackson down in Louisiana, who is a state rep. Now she's a state senator who sponsored this Louisiana abortion bill that's going before the Supreme Court, and she's on her way up. So, you know, I think there's still hope that we could see more pro-life Democrats showing up, which is absolutely critical to finally restoring legal protection to children.
Now, I understand that the mayor of Chicago, and obviously, you know, mayors of Chicago tend to be very liberal, but the current one is a lesbian, and she has said there's no room in our party for, you know, anybody that doesn't believe in a woman's right to choose. So she's out against these pro-life Democrats.
That's right. Mayor Lightfoot has been outspoken against Dan Lipinski, and Nancy Pelosi has really been pretty quiet. You know, she has endorsed Lipinski in the past. She's tried to say that it's a big tent. You know, she's she talks about herself being Catholic and opposed to abortion, but you know, she fights for it. It's a you know, kind of a schizophrenic view that she has, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, she hasn't spoken out in this campaign, and so it does seem as if there's a real kind of a chaos in the Democratic Party over this. But you know, I think if we can encourage people to support Democratic pro-life candidates, I think we could see a change take place.
Now, meanwhile, the party platforms are very different. The two parties' platform on this issue, you know, among others. But you want to make a quick comparison between the Republican and Democrat?
Different. I mean, the Democratic Party is now officially calling for taxpayer-funded abortions. They want to see every possible abortion be funded by taxpayers, and that's now their official position. They used to be a bipartisan effort every year that was expressed in the Hyde Amendment that blocked federal funds from being used for abortions, and they've all abandoned that now. You know, at the top level, all the presidential candidates, including Joe Biden, who used to support the Hyde Amendment year after year after year, I think they're out of step with the American people, but they're desperately trying to shore up that radical base right now, and so you're seeing them espousing, you know, more and more and more radical measures. Right now, the only candidate left who isn't in favor of abortion on demand through all of pregnancy is Tulsi Gabbard, who has admitted that restrictions on late-term abortion should be put in place. So it's an incredibly radical agenda that I don't think they're going to be happy to have to live with when we come to the general election.
Okay, abortion was accepted in America because of Roe v. Wade, and that whole case was built on an allegation of rape, which it turns out wasn't the case. But how about the issue of rape and incest? That keeps returning. It's almost like for the sake of just those two exceptions, they want abortion on demand for all reasons.
That's right, and that's a way we can kind of get past that common objection to say, okay, look, let's say for the sake of argument that we should allow abortion in cases of rape and incest. Are you willing to say that the 99% of abortions, the more than 99% of abortions that are elective, that are not for those kinds of reasons, should be banned or should be severely restricted or something to that effect? And often people raising that objection show their true opinion at that point and will admit, no, in fact, I don't want there to be any restrictions on abortion or only late-term restrictions or something like that. But we also can point out that the innocent child doesn't deserve to be put to death for their father's crime. And there's a lot of interesting information available about this. At the Pro-Life Action League, in fact, we have a brochure called What About Abortion in Cases of Rape and Incest, where we go into some of the data that shows how much more difficult it is to overcome the original sexual assault when the abortion choice is made if the woman becomes pregnant.
Wow.
Which seems, you know, it's an interesting fact, but if you look into it a little more deeply, you realize that, you know, once you're victimizing someone else, the unborn child, it becomes harder to kind of deal with the fact that now you're in the role of the person harming another.
Wow.
You've been hurt, you're the victim, you're innocent, you deserve justice, and it's understandable that you would want to get rid of that pregnancy. But when you do, it does seem to put you in the position of someone who is responsible for injustice against an innocent person and makes it harder to overcome psychologically the whole experience of that rape and that abortion.
Now, when it comes to data related to women regretting having had abortions, I've seen some articles where basically a lot of left, you know, wing people say it's just a myth that women regret abortions. The vast majority of them do not. And by the way, some others have said, okay, but wait until the long term. In other words, maybe within the first 5 years that may be the case, but not in the long run. But what are your thoughts?
Well, actually, Dr. Michael New is a pro-life researcher who's done an awful lot of work in this area, and he's analyzed the most recent report that was making the rounds earlier this year, claiming that women rarely regret their abortions, and over time, you know, seem to all be resolved that it was a wonderful choice. In fact, they're only tracking a select group of self-reporting women. So these are women that have sought out the opportunity to talk about this. So right there's a confirmation bias and there's a selection bias. You know, women who are being who are seeking the opportunity to talk about how they don't regret their abortion are who they're really attracting to these studies. This is not a blind study of a whole pool of women who have had abortions that they're able to talk to. It's part of a longer ongoing study of women who were denied abortions later in pregnancy as well. So they're often, when this annual study gets kind of repeated, you're often looking at comparing apples to oranges. So it's a small sample set, it's a self-selected sample set of women, and it's also only asking them for the first few years after the experience. You're not going to women 10 years, 20 years later. Very often for women who've had abortions, it's not until they get to the end of their fertile life that they, you know, as they start to go into menopause, that they begin to think back on the child or children that they now don't have. So you have to look at the whole range of a woman's life. But I think the easiest answer to this whole quandary is the fact that so many women are speaking out now. The Silent No More groups that go out to the Supreme Court every year to tell their stories, the women who come out at the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children every September that we organize around the country, they're coming to speak out at those types of prayer vigils. We're hearing from so many women who regret their abortions, and their stories are impossible to deny, and Americans are hearing those stories more and more.
When you say Dr. Michael New, how do you spell New?
That's N-E-W.
N-E-W, and where would somebody find that research?
Oh, yes, he did an article at National Review debunking
okay.
the, uh, the claim that women don't really regret their abortions.
All right. How about a comment on abortion survivors? This is kind of, other than Gianna Jessen, who's been around for quite a while, this story is relatively new, and it's starting to get the rounds. And, you know, we saw that there was a very professional ad put together to try and run during the Super Bowl, but the Fox channel or whatever chose not to run it. Well, they did run a drag queen story hour or something ad.
Yeah.
But anyway, a comment on the abortion survivors.
Yeah, in fact, at the March for Life Chicago this year, which has become a big regional March for Life, we had about 9,000 people out there this year, we heard from a woman named Claire Colwell,
mm-hmm.
who it's a really fascinating story. She was placed for adoption as a baby. As an adult, she met her birth mother, and she learned that, in fact, her birth mother had attempted to abort her twice. Twice she survived abortions, and one of those abortions killed her twin. So she lost a twin to abortion. She is an adoptive child, so she knows about that aspect of the whole, you know, series of reproductive choices that are available to women today. And she's a mother. She has her own child, a little girl. So she's been through, you know, kind of every aspect of this. She gave an incredibly powerful testimony about her life and its value. And she's had serious health problems that have resulted from the attempted abortion. But she's a wonderful woman and living a full and healthy life, other than a couple of complications with her club feet and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a very powerful example of exactly what every abortion is doing. It's taking the life of an innocent person who has something to contribute and deserves to be known.
And what about the fact that, an advertisement on the Super Bowl to try and just get the word out there saying, hey, we exist. I think they had about 100 people. By the way, Claire's face was on that ad because I've interviewed Claire. We did a story about her for the D. James Kennedy Ministry Television, as well as Abby Johnson's ministry. But anyway, the Super Bowl ad, your comments?
Well, I don't get too fired up about what Super Bowl ads are played or not because, every single year somebody's going to try to do an ad for this or for that. You know, could be for people against, people for the ethical treatment of animals. There's all kinds of advocacy groups that use the Super Bowl ad as an opportunity to publicize their issue, and that's really what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it was turned down by Fox became the story that allowed, millions of people to actually see it.
See it, yeah.
So that's a good thing. And the Super Bowl, it's not a time when I'm adamant that we be talking about things like abortion or that we be seeing, pornographic displays as we saw during the halftime show. Or the kind of cultural war stuff that happens on a smaller scale in some of those ads. I'd advocate for that being family time for all of us. I'm just grateful that the ad featuring abortion survivors is getting seen by people and that we use the Super Bowl as a way to make that story and get it out there. That's just fine.
All right, we have 1 minute left to go. How important is Election 2020 when it comes to the issue of abortion?
Election 2020 couldn't possibly be more important. We are at the very verge of overturning Roe versus Wade. We're one Supreme Court justice away because this court doesn't want to take that move, I don't think, without having a woman in that majority and having a 6-3 or better majority. So the next Supreme Court justice is probably going to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg and will probably be a woman. Who do you want appointing that justice? We've seen two excellent appointments to the high court by Donald Trump. We've seen hundreds of appointments to the other courts all around the country. Those court appointments alone are worth making your vote all about.
Yes.
The Supreme Court.
Yeah, and the issue of abortion, I love the point that some conservative commentators have made that if you show me somebody who's voting consistently in the pro-life, like a politician or whatever, they tend to get everything else right, usually. It all flows from there.
Yeah, there does seem to be a connection between support for the life of the unborn child and support for the family generally and for a free society.
Very good. All right, your website is prolifeaction.org. Eric Scheidler, thanks for the update.
Glad to be with you. Hope to talk to you soon.
Okay, you too. Thanks. Bye-bye.